Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. Today is Tuesday, November 22. I'm your reader, Kathleen, and I'm reading to you from Denver today. The front page story, Fifth Grader Graduates from Cancer Treatment, this story by Grace King. Fifth grader Bella Saul was celebrated by her Boulder Peak Intermediate School peers Monday after graduating from cancer treatment. Bella, age 10, walked the hallway of Boulder Peak Intermediate, lined with 300 fifth graders cheering her on after a months-long battle with osteosarcoma, a kind of bone cancer that likely developed from radiation treatment from a previous form of cancer that Bella fought. Many educators in the school wore pink t-shirts that read, "Bella Strong." Her peers held signs that read, "You amaze us, you're a warrior, and we're proud of you." Bella was diagnosed with cancer for the first time when she was 3 years old, said Amanda Saul, her mother. She had taken Bella to the doctor and was told she had strep throat, but that night Bella's throat swelled shut and she was rushed to the hospital. By the grace of God, her oxygen level was still 90%, Amanda said. How? I don't know. Bella was airlifted to a children's hospital in San Antonio, Texas, where the family was living at the time. Bella was diagnosed with rhabdomyosarcoma, a cancer of soft tissue, such as muscle, tendon, or cartilage. Bella had a tumor wrapped around her carotid arteries, blood vessels that supply blood to the brain, face, and neck, making it inoperable, Amanda said. After 12 weeks of radiation treatment and a year of chemotherapy, Bella remained cancer-free for 5 years before being diagnosed with osteosarcoma in March. Bella was living with her father in Texas when a mass was found in her jaw, which Amanda said she could see when she had FaceTimed her daughter. Amanda, who had moved back to Iowa, brought Bella to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics for treatment. The treatment was a little harsher this time, Amanda said. She lost about 70% of her hearing. When a plastic surgeon offered to cover up her scars, Bella said no, because that is part of her now, Amanda said. Bella's a fighter. She's sassy. She will inspire you. She's stronger than all of us. There's nothing that can stop her, Amanda said. She is extremely positive. She holds herself together better than any adult I know. She would rather suffer through pain than tell us she's hurting. Bella split her time being in the hospital with being in school and now has returned to school full-time. The family is looking forward to returning to normal, and Bella is even ready to play soccer in the spring, Amanda said. Bella was anxious to start school during cancer treatments because she didn't want to feel different. Before the first day of school in August at Boulder Peak, Bella met with teacher Natalie Schaefer, a fifth-grade social studies and English language arts teacher. Together, they put together a plan for how Bella would learn while in the hospital. She's a very easy kid to get to know, Schaefer said. She has sarcasm, humor, and wit. All these kids felt like they were her best friend right away. Bella's doctors met virtually with the class the first week of school to explain cancer in a kid-friendly way, show that Bella's hospital room looked like, and explain what happens when Bella is in the hospital, Schaefer said. That really helped me and the kids know how we can support her through all this, Schaefer said. Some students would send Bella a video or FaceTime her at the end of the school day as a way to include her in class when she was in the hospital, she said. On Monday, the students showed Bella a video they created, each saying a word that described her, like unshakable, outstanding, heroic, courageous, and kind. I think you really see how big fifth graders' hearts are when they find ways to be supportive of her, even when she's not in school, Schaefer said. These kids have wanted to be by her side every step of the way. Also on the front page today, this story by Marissa Payne, New Cedar Rapids Housing to Help Youth Aging Out of Foster Care. A new affordable housing development in the southeast quadrant will add 44 rental units in Cedar Rapids, with some earmarked for those aging out of the foster care system in an effort to set up this vulnerable youth population for long-term success. Des Moines-based Hatch Development broke ground Monday on Cedar Rapids Brickstone, a $12.2 million four-story multifamily building at 627 6th Street Southeast. The project is a partnership with nonprofit Foundation 2 Crisis Services. Cedar Rapids Mayor Tiffany O'Donnell said the project is an illustration of developments the city needs to maintain momentum of investment and support for core neighborhoods such as Oak Hill Jackson. This development provides more innovation and more opportunities for that walkable, livable community that we know we need in Cedar Rapids, O'Donnell said. Of the 44 units, 34 will be reserved for tenants at or below 60% of area median income, and 10 units will be marked for tenants at or below 30% of area median income, according to the city. The developer will set aside 5 units for tenants who have aged out of foster care. Foundation 2's Fostering Futures team will provide on-site supportive services for the young adults and other tenants who need to be connected with community resources. That's where affordable housing really needs to go in the future, bringing in peripheral services that the tenants need to make it through life to add to their capabilities of succeeding, Jack Hatch, principal of Hatch Development, told the Gazette. These are usually young people that have too many barriers in front of them, and they need help. Construction is underway and slated to wrap up by fall of 2023. The project has received city financial incentives, a 10-year, 100% abatement on the increased value the project generates, as well as a 5-year, 100% reimbursement on the increased taxes generated directly after the 10-year abatement period. To help with rising construction costs stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic, the City Council in August awarded $200,000 of federal American Rescue Plan Act funds. Council member Dale Todd, who works for Hatch Development, has recused himself from voting on items related to this project and from discussions on this development. The Iowa Finance Authority last year awarded low-income housing tax credits to support the project as well. Foundation 2 Executive Director Emily Blum said this site was a prime location for such a project to take shape, not far from the organization's future headquarters at the historic Whitwer Building, 305 Second Avenue Southeast. It's also in proximity to resources, including other nonprofits and service providers, the Ground Transportation Center for bus access around the city, and the downtown Cedar Rapids Public Library for access to computers for job searches and educational supports. Access to safe, stable, and affordable housing is critical in setting our young people up for success, Blum said. We know that affordable housing, paired with case management and affordable services, can holistically serve our young adults better, adequately preparing them to thrive independently and successfully into their future. Blum said youth face housing challenges such as an inability to get a cosigner, access to transportation, or simply finding available housing, as some may have a criminal record or substance abuse issues with which they need support. Case managers help these youth with educational and employment opportunities, physical and mental health care, as well as skills such as budgeting, housing, and cooking, Blum said. According to Blum, Foundation 2's Fostering Futures program houses the Iowa Aftercare Services Network as the service provider in Lynn, Johnson, Benton, Jones, and Iowa counties. The state program provides voluntary supports to young adults aged 18 to 21 who experienced foster care. She said Foundation 2's caseworkers typically juggle a combined load of 120 cases at a time. We'll have units that will allow these aging out of foster care to be safely and stably housed, so then we can focus on the other skills, that educational piece, that employment piece, Blum said. As a former state senator, Hatch advocated for youth within the foster care system and worked with his state house colleagues to develop a scholarship program for foster care children who were not adopted after age 16. He said the goal is to foster relationships with Kirkwood Community College to help these young tenants pursue educational opportunities. This is more than just a housing project, said Mike Kiernan, contributing co-developer of Hatch Development. Anyone can build bricks and mortar. This is a ladder and opportunity for these kids. Turning now to the Iowa Today page, page 2, this story is by Gage Miskimen, Marion official Tom Treharne moving on after 21 years. After 21 years with the City of Marion, Community Development Director Tom Treharne is leaving early next month to join NextEra Energy. Treharne joined the city in 2001 as the Planning and Development Director and became Community Development Director with the merging of the Planning and Development and Building Departments in 2019. He also served as the interim city manager for several months in 2021, following the departure of former city manager Lon Plucken. After 21 years, it's hard to move on, Treharne told the Gazette on Monday, but I leave proud and feeling accomplished. It's just time for something new, and I look forward to my next adventure. Treharne, whose salary was $149,666, is set to become a senior project manager for NextEra Energy. He said his family plans to remain in Marion. NextEra, which has operated in Iowa since 1999, is planning to construct two utility-scale solar projects near Palo next year. The company also has 11 wind projects in the state. The Palo site, near the decommissioned Duane Arnold nuclear plant, would be its first solar project in Iowa, though it has them in 27 other states. During his time with the city, Treharne led the city's long-term planning efforts, including the development of the 2010 Central Corridor Plan, the completion of the 6th Avenue Corridor, and the 7th Avenue Streetscape Project. Other projects, including the neighborhood at Indian Creek, Tower Terrace Road, the Uptown Master Plan, and the Central Plaza, have happened or have been happening under Treharne's watch. Working for Marion has been an exceptional experience, and I feel fortunate to have been involved in so many great projects, Treharne said. The place at which Marion has grown has given me opportunities many planners simply don't get to experience. Treharne also has been an active partner of the Marion Chamber of Commerce, Marion Economic Development Corp., and Uptown Marion District, and continues to serve on the board of directors for Marion Cares, a nonprofit that focuses on helping children and families in the community. Much of the momentum we are currently experiencing is the product of many years of planning and establishing a bigger vision for our city, Marion Mayor Nick Abu Asali said. Tom Treharne was an important part of those efforts. Also on page two, this story by Isabel Zaluska, applications now available for Iowa City Council seat. The application to fill the upcoming vacancy on the Iowa City Council now is available. The Iowa City Council last week voted unanimously to fill the vacancy by appointment instead of holding a special election. The appointee will succeed council member Janice Weiner, who resigned November 9 after being elected as state senator in District 45. 1 year is left on her four-year at-large council term, which runs through January 2, 2024. Her resignation becomes effective January 1. The application is online at www.iowacity.org, and that's iowa-city.org/forms/council-vacancy-application. Or a paper copy can be picked up at City Hall, 410 East Washington Street. The application asks those interested to describe their background, what contributions they could make, and what their knowledge of the council is, among other questions. The deadline to apply is January 3. The council will fill the vacancy at a special meeting at 3 p.m. January 10 at City Hall. During the public meeting, finalists may make an oral presentation about their interest in the job, according to a city news release. If voters want to petition for a special election, the petition must be filed within 14 days after the council decides an appointment or within 14 days after the appointment is made. A petition requesting a special election must have signatures from at least 743 eligible Iowa City voters. Also in Iowa Today News, Monarch Research's fourth planting season concludes. This story is by Brittany Miller. Local nonprofit Monarch Research has completed its fourth planting season, reaching a third of its overall target for tree restoration in Linn County. More than 3,800 participants received upwards of 13,700 trees during the Fall Planting Forward initiative. More than 45% of the selected trees were oak species, which provide important habitats for butterflies, birds, and more critters. The group originally ordered 15,000 trees for the season, but some species were unavailable, said Monarch Research co-founder Clark McLeod. The group's spring planting season earlier this year yielded about 14,500 distributed trees. The Planting Forward initiative held its first planting season in 2021 and aims to plant 150,000 trees by 2026. This year's progress brings the group to 54,000 trees distributed. Our mission is to literally touch every landowner in Linn County, McLeod said. This planting season also featured a new program, a native tree right-of-way enrichment pilot in partnership with the City of Marion. Monarch Research provided 1,500 trees to Marion to replace fallen trees and establish new growth in areas that were previously vacant. 500 of these trees were planted by residents and landowners through the pilot. Participants will be expected to care for their new trees through the first 5 years. Plans for continuing the pilot into 2023 are in progress. One of the biggest issues with cities planting trees is getting citizens to take care of the tree, McLeod said. The volunteers in the pilot are people who have volunteered to take care of the tree. Monarch Research was formed in 2015 to increase native pollinator habitat and monarch populations in Linn County. Its Planting Forward community-wide initiative, which was established following the 2020 derecho, aims to replant 150,000 native trees over a 5-year period, which began in April 2021. The nonprofit targets private landowners by partnering with businesses, schools, hospitals, neighborhoods, and local governments to distribute trees to employees and their communities across Linn County. By making a diverse and native array of trees more available to the public, the nonprofit aims to help ecosystems recover from the derecho and deforestation while bolstering habitat for insects and animals. It's a 300-year investment in the community, McLeod said. Orders for the spring planting forward season will open in March, and the trees will be available for planting in April. Come January, Monarch Research will release the list of species available to order. Monarch Research is working on several new programs to help educate Linn County residents and children about the importance of native trees and how to care for them, McLeod said. The nonprofit is building partnerships with local hospitals with the goal of providing a tree for every new birth in Linn County in 2023. The child will grow up with the tree, McLeod said. The idea behind that is to imprint the child with the importance of the tree. Hopefully, when they have a child, we want that child to have their own tree as well. Monarch Research also is working on a program for collecting and planting acorns. 4,000 northern red oak acorns were harvested this year to be planted in the spring. We're trying to get at people in different ways to learn about nature, McLeod said. Education is really what it's all about. This next story by Aaron Murphy is titled, Iowa Turkeys to be Pardoned Virtually Due to Bird Flu. And that's right under a photo of Biden's holiday opening when he pardoned two huge turkeys named Chocolate and Chip. This story from Des Moines. An annual tradition is heading online as state and agriculture officials exercise caution with the threat of bird flu looming. Governor Kim Reynolds will pardon two turkeys via video this morning, the governor's office said. The annual tradition typically is conducted at the governor's mansion on Terrace Hill in Des Moines, but the avian influenza, commonly known as the bird flu, has been infecting flocks throughout the Midwest, including in Iowa, since March. With that specter looming, officials determined it was unsafe to transport turkeys this week. Instead, Reynolds will record a video message that will be published this morning on the governor's social media accounts, a spokesman said. Iowa's turkey pardoning event is something the governor looks forward to every year, but with a statewide order currently in place to prevent flocks from the threat of highly pathogenic avian influenza, The turkeys won't be transported to Terrace Hill, Reynolds spokesman Alex Murphy said via email. The State Agricultural Department on November 10, for the second time this year, issued an order canceling all live bird exhibitions and other gatherings of birds. The previous order was issued March 23 and lifted June 3. The most recent confirmation of a new case of bird flu came October 31st in a commercial flock in Wright County. It was the 21st confirmed case this year. The 2022 bird flu has not been nearly as destructive as 2015, when more than 31 million birds died or were euthanized, causing $1.2 billion in economic damage, according to one report. Reynolds also will participate in the annual tree lighting ceremony at the Iowa Capitol today. Reynolds is not expected to field questions at the tree lighting event, her spokesman said. Reynolds has not held a formal gathering with State House reporters since July. Earlier this month, she was elected to another four-year term. Turning now to the Insight page, the editorial today is a reprint from Sunday's New York Daily News and the title, GOP Needs to Focus on Goals. In the midterms, Republicans who focused on inflation, crime, and other concrete problems made gains. Those who slung the slop of Trumpite invective and conspiracy theories, insisting the 2020 election was stolen, overwhelmingly remained stuck in the muck. Yet, since narrowly taking the House, Republicans under leader and likely next Speaker Kevin McCarthy have not rolled out a five-point crime control agenda, or a smart plan to slow inflation, or a blueprint for fixing America's immigration system. Rather, out of the gate, the incoming leaders of the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees are vowing to investigate President Joe Biden's son. We hope they enjoy themselves. The people they represent sure won't appreciate 2 years of Benghazi-style hysterics. Let's be clear. Hunter Biden had lucrative dealings with foreign firms. His laptop is not some right-wing fever dream. An NBC News analysis of his hard drive and other documents published in May revealed that from 2013 through 2018, he and his firm raked in about $11 million from work with a Ukrainian firm and a Chinese businessman since accused of wrongdoing. Indeed, the president's son is now under investigation by the Delaware U.S. attorney, with prosecutors led by Trump appointee David Weiss purportedly weighing charging him with tax crimes and making a false statement regarding a gun purchase. In contrast to a predecessor who treated the justice system as a weapon to wield against his enemies, Joe Biden has said he will not interfere with the professionals as they mull what to do. Attorney General Merrick Garland made a similar pledge. Not content with letting the wheels of justice turn, learning nothing from the first Trump impeachment, hyperventilating House Republicans are intent on smearing the son, and by association, the father, in a transparent attempt to fire up the angriest slice of their base. President Biden has signed into law a $1 trillion infrastructure bill and an Inflation Adjustment Act with $500 billion in new spending and tax break. Here's a crazy idea. Maybe the House Oversight Committee could make it its highest priority to oversee that spending. And again, that's a reprint from the New York Daily News. The guest column today by Nicholas Johnson, U.S. House Needs More Bipartisanship. Even dreams that never come true sometimes lead to proposals that do. So may it be with my dream for selecting speakers of the U.S. House of Representatives. Mike Huckabee said when he inspected planes before flying, "I'm not just interested in the left wing or the right wing. I'd kind of like for both of them to be there." Well, so would I. And after the last election, an increasing number of Republicans and Democrats think so as well. By definition, a successful democracy requires more than one ruling party. It requires bipartisanship, time and effort at legislating with compatibility, mutual respect, and willingness to compromise. Unfortunately, it is the U.S. House of Representatives' traditions and norms that have created the battlefield. The Constitution imposes no such restraints. Article 1, Section 2 merely states, the House shall choose their Speaker. The Speaker need not be a majority party member, nor even a member of the House. Though no outsiders have been elected, some received votes. Republicans need to rebuild their party. Democrats want Republicans they can work with. Voters are disgusted, asking both parties to start helping working people, not just major donors. The opportunity before the House is the selection of their next Speaker. Yes, I know, the House Republicans have pre-selected Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, but he may not have the support of a House majority when the vote is taken January 3. Rather than leave McCarthy with the need to yield power to his non-compromises, election-denying, party-without-a-platform, MAGA extremists, insurrectionist House members, how about the ultimate bipartisanship? Each party can have its leadership, and tradition would dictate a Speaker from the House majority party, but shouldn't the Speaker be the choice of both major parties? There is precedent. In 1910, dissatisfied Republicans joined Democrats in stripping Speaker Joseph Cannon of some powers. In 1997, Republican Speaker Newt Gingrich feared dissenting Republicans would vote with Democrats, making Democrat Dick Gephardt Speaker. In Nancy Pelosi's 2021 election as Speaker, two votes went to neither her nor McCarthy, and three members voted present. On a more positive note, since 2017, the House Problem Solvers Caucus, with 58 members, 29 from each party, has been successfully seeking to foster bipartisan cooperation on key policy issues. Wouldn't it be worth a similar try to build a majority from both parties that could agree on a Republican Speaker who would serve all House members? A Speaker indebted only to them, with no need for concessions to those members more interested in winning a war with the enemy party than legislating for the American people. Like Huckabee's airplane, the House needs wise adults on left and right. With or without a bipartisan Speaker, hopefully, this dream of one may inspire other proposals for converting the current mudball fight into a legislative body of problem solvers worthy of the name and the U.S. House. And that's Nicholas Johnson, who's the author of Columns of Democracy. You can reach him by email, mailbox@nicholasjohnson.org. One community letter today is titled, Streamline Authorization for Pain Treatment. As a practicing rheumatologist, I see patients daily who are often dealing with pain and life-altering diseases. So I find real joy in being able to provide treatment or care that can offer relief. But that's not always possible because of prior authorization policies. While health insurance plans say these policies are in place to save costs on expensive or experimental treatments, the reality in practice is untrained insurance representatives delaying or outright denying treatment prescribed by doctors. According to a study of the American Medical Association, 93% of patients face delays in necessary care because of prior authorization. On average, medical practices like mine waste 2 full business days per week dealing with prior authorization paperwork. But the most worrying impact is that these delays in care may cause severe harm and worsen health outcomes for my patients. To address this problem, the U.S. House of Representatives recently passed the Improving Seniors' Timely Access to Care Act, taking a significant step towards streamlining the prior authorization process in Medicare Advantage plans. However, none of these changes will go into effect without Senate action. I encourage Senator Chuck Grassley, as a leader in the Senate, to work to pass this bill this year and ensure that Medicare Advantage beneficiaries living in Iowa have timely access to the care they need. And that letter today is submitted by Bharat Kumar, MD, who lives in Iowa City. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette today, November 22nd, on IRIS. And now we turn to today's obituary page, beginning with the short notices. First from Decorah, Robert Teslow, 83, died Sunday, November 20. Helms Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. In Hiawatha, Patrick J. White, age 81, died Saturday, November 19. Tien Funeral Home. In Lansing, Carl Mularkey, 94, died Sunday, November 20. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home is in charge. In Monticello, Joanne Schenck, age 80, died Sunday, November 20. Getch Funeral Home is assisting the family. From Shellsburg, Richard E. Park, age 90, died Sunday, November 20. Phillips Funeral Home in Vinton. And in Vinton, Leah Miller, age 88, died Monday, November 21st. Van Steenhuis Tien Funeral Home is assisting. Turning now to the regular notices. First, from Englewood, Florida, Catherine Ann Halpin Munsell, age 81, of Cedar Rapids and Boca Grande, Florida, passed away Thursday, November 17th in Englewood, Florida. Kathy was very philanthropic, volunteering her time with Meals on Wheels in Iowa and Florida, and spent countless hours knitting hats for newborns. Memorials are suggested to the History Center in Cedar Rapids or the Monarch Research Project. A celebration of life in Cedar Rapids will be planned in the spring. In Cedar Rapids, Kevin Marlowe, age 49, passed in his sleep Friday, November 18, at his home. The family will greet friends from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 25th at the Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of Kevin's life will take place later in the summer 2023. You can share a memory of Kevin at murdochfuneralhome.com. In Cedar Rapids, Mary Faith Knapp, age 89, passed away Saturday, November 19th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. Memorial services are at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, November 23. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids. Interment, Linwood Cemetery, Cedar Rapids. Also in Cedar Rapids, Sister Mary K. Kevin Dugan, RSM, age 97, died November 19th at Hallmar in Cedar Rapids after a brief illness. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, November 29th at the Sacred Heart Chapel, Reverend Greg Ball officiating. Burial will be at the Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday, November 28th at the Sacred Heart Chapel with a wake service at 6:30 p.m. Arrangements are with the Tien Funeral Home. In Cedar Rapids, Terry Allen Williams, age 75, died after a battle with a rare lung disease on November 18th at Mercy Medical Center. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Tien Funeral Home is assisting the family. Memorials may be directed to the Community Health Free Clinic at 947 14th Avenue, Southeast, Cedar Rapids, 52401. In West Union, Richard, known as Dick Miller, passed away peacefully Saturday, November 19. If you ever drove around the area with Dick, he would tell you how he built the fireplace in this house or laid the brick in that building or that house. Dick passed away at Stony Brook Assisted Living. The employees were very important to him, and he often shared how his girls were so amazing. There will be a funeral service at Bethel Presbyterian Church on Sunday, November 27th at 1 p.m. Following the funeral, a celebration of life will be held at the West Union Fire Station from 2 to 5. Donations may be made to Gunderson Palmer Hospice or the West Union Fire Department. Online condolences can be directed to the family at iowacremation.com. From Swisher, Merle, known as Mert Marie Patterson, age 93, passed away November 14th at the Solon Retirement Village. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, November 28th at the Shueyville United Methodist Church. Celebration of life service will be at 11 a.m. Monday, November 28th at Shueyville United Methodist. Private family interment will be in Oakland Cemetery in Solon. Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids are in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the Shuiville United Methodist Church in her name. Turning now to the sports page, high school football, IPSWA All-State, Mount Vernon cashes in. This story by K.J. Pilcher. Mount Vernon coach Lance Pedersen was introduced to many of his current football players in middle school. They were members of his fifth grade health class. Pedersen said he has watched them grow as athletes and people over the last 8 years. He also witnessed them develop into unified force on the football field. A wonderful group of kids, Pedersen said, after the second-ranked Mustangs state runner-up finished to number one Harlan on Friday. Love all of them. The hard work and effort that helped produce Mount Vernon's first unbeaten regular season in 20 years and the first finals appearance since 2015 garnered postseason recognition. Seven Mustangs were named to the Class 3A All-State football teams selected by the Iowa Print Sports Writers Association. Mount Vernon and Cedar Rapids Xavier in 4A led the way with six first-team picks, while Solon managed three first-teamers in 3A. Offensive lineman Chuck Younggreen, quarterback Joey Romberg, defensive lineman Brad Bislissel, linebacker Jackson Jaspers, safety Henry Ryan, and Zadok Holub nabbed first-team honors. Wide receiver Evan Brace was a second-team honoree. All played vital parts for Mount Vernon's 12-1 record, doubling its win total from last season. It's a very, very special group, Pedersen said. I'm so happy for these guys being recognized. They were deserving of it. We are very proud of them. Romberg, a junior named as an offensive utility player, amassed 2,753 offensive yards, passing for 2,543 yards and 25 touchdowns, and etched his name among the program's single-season leaders, despite missing the 3A championship game due to injury. All three totals ranked second in 3A. Romberg completed 225 of 350 passes. Both are 3A bests. A lot of great stories, Pedersen said. It was great to see. Vislissel wreaked havoc at the line of scrimmage for Mount Vernon. He was second in 3A with 9 sacks and 24.5 tackles for loss. The Mustangs had one of the top defenses in the class, posting 5 shutouts. He did a lot of good things, Pedersen said. When he wanted to, he could control the line of scrimmage. Jaspers led the team and ranked third in 3A with 80 solo tackles. He also returned an interception for a touchdown against Harlan. The versatile Ryan earned honors on defense but moved to quarterback for the finals and almost guided the Mustangs to an upset. You can't overlook what he did, Pedersen said of Ryan. What a great leader. He was amazing for us. Solon was represented on the 3A first team by defensive lineman Ben Kempman, linebacker Brett White, and defensive back Blake Timmons. The Saints were able to close out a perfect season, making a second straight finals appearance. Xavier won its fourth title under head coach Duane Schulte, dropping defending state champion Council Bluffs Lewis Central 45-38 in the final. Xavier had 10 overall picks, placing 4 on the second team. 8 are seniors. For our program, these seniors demonstrate everything we strive for at Xavier, Schulte wrote in an email. They started in our youth programs, listened to their youth coaches, and then followed everything we asked them to do once they got here at Xavier. They are outstanding people as much as they are outstanding football players. Running back Michael Cunningham, receiver Aiden McDermott, lineman Ben Volk were Xavier's first teamers on offense, while Thomas Sundell, Jevin Rexroth, and Joseph Lemker were selected first team on defense. They were joined by Marion's Alex Boda, a University of Iowa signee. McDermott and Sundell garnered first team honors for the second straight season. Aiden and Thomas excel because they have determination, Schulte said. Something inside them makes them want to compete. It stems from their families and perhaps was pushed some more by coaches and teammates here at Xavier. Bottom line, they both hate to lose. Williamsburg reached the 2A championship game and three Raiders earned accolades. Owen Douglas and Derek Weisskopf made the first team on defense. Douglas, a lineman, tallied 41.5 tackles, including 11 for loss and 2 sacks. Weisskopf, a University of Iowa Hawkeye commit, tied for the 2A lead with 6 interceptions, returning 1 for a score. In Class 5A, Iowa City High utility Ben Keeter claimed first-team honors for a second consecutive year. He was joined by Cedar Rapids Kennedy's defensive lineman, Andrew Myers. In sports of area interest today, many girls' basketball games are on slate. Boys' swimming takes place with Jefferson Kennedy and Linmar at Washington at 5 p.m., and there's even some high school bowling on the agenda. In that swimming category, high school boys swimming exchange student excited to swim. This story is by Mike Condon. One of Kai Sasseron de Carvalho's first questions to his host family when he arrived in Cedar Rapids as a foreign exchange student was, "Where will I swim?" It didn't take long for his host parents, Monica and John Kurtz, to find him a team. They saw on his exchange student application form that he was a swimmer, but since he was going to be enrolled at Cedar Valley Christian, his host parents had to find him a program. "We hadn't even enrolled him in high school at Cedar Valley Christian yet," Monica Kurtz said, "since we lived in the Washington School District, as well as having the knowledge that it was one of the best high school swim teams in the city of Cedar Rapids. We knew he would have an incredible opportunity to be coached by the best." The Washington swim team has a long-standing tradition in the community and within the state of guiding and coaching strong swimmers. "If we were going to host him at our home, we wanted him to swim with the best." Sasseron de Carvalho arrived in Cedar Rapids from his home in Sao Paulo, Brazil, August 27th. One day later, he was invited to a swim family event at Washington. "We had a great discussion about our program, and I got a chance to learn more about Kyle," said Warriors coach Matt Sinat about a Zoom meeting that he had held with Monica and John Kurtz. "After that Zoom meeting, I invited him and his host parents to our preseason picnic to meet the staff and the swimmers. After a few minutes of talking with Kyle, I could see the excitement in his eyes when we talked about swimming and how much swimming means to us and how passionate we are about the sport." In abbreviating, Sasseron de Carvalho hopes to return to the United States to swim collegiately after he returns to Brazil following his exchange year. Turning now to the community page, ChildServe is expanding services in eastern Iowa. An organization serving children with developmental delays, disabilities, injuries, and other special health care needs is expanding in eastern Iowa. ChildServe is doubling the size of its location in Coralville and opening its first satellite location in Hiawatha. This is a proactive approach to investing in the children of Iowa, ChildServe CEO Terry Wallig said in a statement. "We've seen growth in wait lists for our services following the pandemic and have big plans to meet the increasing demand for children with special health care needs," Wallig said. The expansion projects are part of the organization's regional growth strategy that includes enhancing its 3 main campuses. These campuses are in Ames, Des Moines, and near Iowa City. There also is a location in Johnston. "These locations will become regional centers from which we can extend our reach to surrounding communities with satellite facilities," Wallig said. ChildServe serves more than 1,000 children and families from Johnson County and surrounding counties through more than a dozen services, according to the organization. The 4 specialist areas are autism services, pediatric rehabilitation, complex medical care, and community-based services. "We partner with local hospitals, pediatric specialists, and healthcare providers to improve outcomes and make life a little easier for families caring for children with special health care needs," said Marie Hassel, ChildServe Regional Director. Over the next 18 months, an expansion project will double the size of ChildServe's location at 2350 Oakdale Boulevard in Coralville. The expansion will increase access to outpatient therapy services, as well as autism and applied behavioral analysis services, for more than 220 children each year, according to the news release. Team members who have been providing behavioral services at the 2771 Oakdale Boulevard location across the street will be brought to the main building. A groundbreaking on the 13,000 square foot location is anticipated for spring, according to the release. ChildServe's first satellite location also is anticipated for spring. It will be located at 1661 Boyson Square Drive in Hiawatha. The 7,540 square foot space will offer autism and applied behavioral analysis services, as well as outpatient therapy for more than 200 children. And that news story is submitted by Isabel Zaluska. In some Eastern Iowa briefs, families can pick up a kit to help kids with grief. Unity Point Hospice has created a free Camp Embracing Memories, Teen and Children's Winter Camp Kit that families can pick up and do as needed. The kit is designed to teach coping skills that are helpful throughout life, but particularly as children or teens work through a grief process. Activities include a remembrance project. Adults are encouraged to do the activities with their kids or teens. Conversation starters also are included. The kit supplies everything needed to encourage in the activities. Two kits are available based on ages: a teen camp kit for kids 13 and older, a child camp kit for 12 years age and younger. Families can pick up their free kit from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. December 13th to 16th at Unity Point Hospice, 290 Blairs Ferry Road, Suite 100 in Cedar Rapids. To sign up or receive a kit, you may call 319-369-7744. In Cedar Rapids, with the holiday season upon us, no pet should have to be without a family to call their own. To ensure pets get a chance to go from shelter kennels to cozy couches of loving homes, Bissell Pet Foundation is hosting its Empty the Shelters Holiday Hope Reduced Fee Adoption Event November 1st to 11th at various locations, including the Cedar Valley Humane Society at 7411 Mount Vernon Road Southeast. All adult dogs over 9 months and cats and kittens at Cedar Valley Humane Society will have a reduced fee of $50 during the event. The Bissell Pet Foundation will be donating back to the Humane Society $50 for every dog and $20 for every cat adopted during the event. Bissell Pet Foundation, a national animal welfare organization dedicated to ending pet homelessness, is partnering with 286 animal shelters across the country for its reduced fee adoption event. Shelters are overcrowded and in desperate need of support due to slowed adoption rates and increased length of stay for pets, said Kathy Bissell, who founded Bissell Pet Foundation in 2011. With so many people seeking to add pets to their family around this time of year, our Empty the Shelters Holiday Hope event is the perfect opportunity to make a difference in your community by saving a life and creating space to give another homeless pet a chance. Empty the Shelters is the nation's largest funded adoption event. Nearly 126,000 pets have found homes across the country and in Canada since its inception in 2016. Although pets can feel like a gift in terms of the joy they bring to life, the foundation reminds prospective pet parents that adopting a pet during the holidays is a long-term commitment. Potential adopters are encouraged to visit the Empty the Shelters website to find the nearest participating shelter and confirm adoption day details. For those details, go to bissellpetfoundation.org/programs/empty-the-shelters. In Maquoketa, the 18th Annual Festival of Trees is on display at the Onward Center. A winter wonderland of decorated trees and wreaths is on view through November 27th at the Onward Fine Arts Center, 1215 East Platt Street. The center is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and noon to 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The goal this year, again, is to create a holiday atmosphere to be enjoyed by everyone attending the center's functions. Proceeds will go to the Onward Fine Arts Center. Attendees can purchase a holiday family gift pass, offering 4 tickets to any future Onward Fine Arts Center production. Cost is $80 and they never expire. To order, call 563-652-9815 between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. or stop by the Fine Arts Center. Soon, families in the region in eastern Iowa, Dubuque, and Monticello will have a new way to access toys for their children. In the coming months, Creative Adventure Lab will launch the Toy Box, a toy lending library that will make thousands of high-quality, developmentally appropriate toys accessible to families. The Toy Box will be located in Creative Adventure Lab's existing facilities in Dubuque and Monticello, and toy borrowing will be available to anyone with a Family Play membership. Also, thanks to widespread community support, Creative Adventure Lab is offering 300 scholarships for Family Play memberships to income-qualified families. Those who qualify for the free and reduced lunch program at school would meet the income criteria for a free membership. In addition to gaining access to the Toy Box, a Family Play membership also gives families unlimited Play Lab admission to Creative Adventure Lab's Dubuque and Monticello facilities. We know that kids love to play and that play is a critical part of healthy youth development, said Jordan DeGree, Creative Adventure Lab's executive director. Toys are the tools of the trade when it comes to play, and the Toy Box is one way we can help make sure every child has access to fun, engaging toys as they grow up. The Toy Box will be stocked with gently used toys that have been donated through corporate donation drives. The Toy Box won't have due dates or late fees. Participants simply bring the borrowed toys back when kids are done playing and exchange them for new ones. Many toys also will be accompanied by play prompts to help adults and children play together. As a father of 3, I know how quickly toys can accumulate in the home, DeGree noted. A toy lending library membership is a great way for families to reduce toy clutter in their homes, while giving their children access to thousands of toys every year. To learn more or find out if you qualify for the scholarship, go to creativeadventurelab.com/thetoybox. Turning now to the weather page, Cedar Rapids looks for a high of 47 today and a low of 25, 48 in Iowa City and a low of 25. Temperatures remain pretty constant through the rest of the week. Thursday, a slight chance of rain, and that high again at 44 or 46. Normally, the high today is 43, and the low is 25. A record high of 66 degrees was set in 1908. A record low of 1 below zero was set in 1937. Sunset tonight is at 4:40 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 7:06 a.m. That gives us 9 hours and 35 minutes of daylight. We are in the new moon phase with moon rise at 6:46 a.m. and moon set at 4:25 p.m. It's not uncommon to see snowflakes in eastern Iowa, but why do some of the flurries and light snow showers not appear on the radar? Because it develops below the radar's line of sight. The farther the radar is from a snow shower, the higher up the radar beam is to the atmosphere. This means flurries that develop from clouds lower won't be seen. That story by meteorologist Hannah Messier. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, November 22, 2022. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a copy of today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening to today's reading, and have a great, safe day. We'll be right back.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Ready.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing. It really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.